Welcome to the CBS and Days edition of Daytime Confidential, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're discussing all the latest in CBS and Days of Our Lives news, and maybe a little bit of recaps along the way. We hope you enjoy, so stay tuned. Before we get started, I think it's pretty much obvious to anyone who's listened to this podcast before, I have a cold. I apologize in advance. I'm a little bit stuffy, but I'm going to try and make my way through this podcast. We're going to discuss some news and a little bit of recaps, but it's going to be a little bit more informal than normal because of the fact that we're just coming off the holidays, and so soaps were a little bit slow, but there was some big news. I do want to take and quickly address one thing. We got an email from someone who was criticizing us for not having discussed the fact that Donna was well or out of the hospital, and the fact that the Snyders had had their Hubbard squash cutting thing. In our defense, the Hubbard squash stuff had not yet, the week had not ended. We did not record podcasts that week. That's how these things go. Donna on Bold and the Beautiful. Or not Bold and Beautiful. I'm thinking Pam. There we go. Pam.
Oh. Okay.
I was going to say, what's the talk about Donna?
And what is all this about squash?
Well, because apparently in all the Days of Our Lives hype, in the atrocities that have been going on there, some people have thought that we have not given the CBS soaps their proper due.
No. Well, I'm wondering what – there was some squash hunting or picking.
It's the Hubbard squash that they each cut into on Thanksgiving for the Thanksgiving episodes.
Of what show?
As the World Turns.
It's a Snyder thing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Tell me something. I'm like, the Hubbards, Jesse and Angie, they bought some squash? I don't know.
No. Before we get to the news, let's just talk about Thanksgivings. I realize that the Hubbard squash is a Thanksgiving tradition on As the World Turns, but I have to say that for myself, I was a little bit disappointed on As the World Turns with their Thanksgiving. Once again, this show goes through everything at such a lightning fast speed that Thanksgiving dinner literally took place in the last 5-10 minutes of the show. There was a little bit of buildup, primarily in which part Luke was getting drunk. But other than that, I was sort of disappointed. I don't even know how to put it. And I was a little bit disappointed with the Young and the Restless Thanksgivings this year as well. Maybe it's just me. Mike, did you watch As the World Turns Thanksgiving episode?
If that's what you want to call it, yes. I have long been disappointed with the holidays on soaps. It used to be a big, huge tradition to fill their house with almost every character, it seemed. It's kind of nice that everybody does come around the table at Emma's, but you're right. It was last minute. It was
as
it used to be.
And as I remember it, now forgive me because I have had a terrible cold and have not been in the best of shape, but if I'm not mistaken, they basically bowed their heads for prayers. Everybody took a sip of something in one scene, and the next scene it was clearing off the plates from dinner. And and maybe I'm wrong, maybe I missed something because I have been suffering from this cold, but to me, if you're having a Thanksgiving episode and you have all these people there, why in the world can't you have more going on at the dinner table? Dinner table dynamics are some of the best that you can get in soaps. It's like, it's not quite the same as the Quartermains and their pizza and stuff at Thanksgiving, but darn it,
You're right. A lot can happen. And you know from watching All My Children, when everybody gets together at the inn, all
at
the
Pine
kind
Valley.
Of stuff that happens. Right.
Well, yeah. I mean, that type of stuff has been built up for years to the point where so much bad stuff happened, the Pine Valley Inn had to ban the Montgomery Kane family from it.
Right.
So why with the Snyders? And you have Paul and Meg there, and then you have Carly. And why is it more happening at this thing?
Yeah, it seems like it would be something that could write itself. I mean, you have all these people with all their motivations and all their histories and all their feelings all mixed up, and they're sitting there trying to say what makes, you know, what are you thankful for? And then, you know, they kind of breeze around the table and move on when all this dynamic is right there. Like Carly and Lily, yeah, okay, they've mended fences, but they don't really have to like each other all the time. And then you've got Janet and Carly and Sage and Janet.
And they did play up the
Luke
whole
Luke and Brian and Lucinda. And I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff just sitting right there, and it's all breezed right over.
And Janet and Emma, they gave that a little bit of a nod in the prep, but why couldn't mm-hmm. there have been more?
Yeah.
And here's the ironic thing. Be ready to brace yourselves, because I ended up having a chance to watch the Guiding Light episode, and for the Thanksgiving one, because it was working, it was Wednesday. The Guiding Light episode was better than the As the World Turns one in the context of what they did around the meal. Now, granted, there was no meal on Guiding Light other than like crackers.
Yeah, the Boudreaux's passed around the Thanksgiving pigeon.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there was no major Thanksgiving dinner, but the lead up to it was really good, and yeah. all the stuff
oh, God,
going
they couldn't
on
even
was really
afford
good.
Play-Doh food.
Well, but hey, I got to give them their due, because that was one of the better episodes, or one of my favorite episodes of Guiding Light in a while. And I thought that the now her name slips my mind, Mallet and Marina, I thought that dynamic was pretty good. I liked Buzz. I liked Reva's speech. I enjoyed it more so than As the World Turns, and that's totally unexpected.
Right. You're right.
Not for me. Guiding Light's been better than As the World Turns for a couple of weeks now, because Guiding Light is actually getting a little bit better and gelling, whereas As the World Turns has totally become plot-driven. That's like Thanksgiving is just a plot device for them. There's no – it's just racing at breakneck speed to the next plot. I mean, you know, who can Brad be accused of murdering next week? Or I mean – and I really think that they're – you know, that whole calculated – interview with Barbara Bloom and Chris Goutman, the writing is on the wall. They're writing this fast because they're trying to show that they can cram in stories in a lesser amount of time than five
hey,
days a week.
They got a 3-day-a-week gig last week.
And it didn't help.
No.
I mean, Chris has said that it should go to 3 days, or that he would like it to. Paraphrasing here, not exact quote. He had 3 days to make
it. Now, this is what I wonder, though. But, yeah, this is the thing. That's what they're trying to go to. But I wonder, will Chris Goutman want his salary as executive producer of The Guiding Light to go down by 2/5 a year? You know, that's what I'm wondering.
But, you mean As the World Turns?
As the World Turns.
Yeah, As the World Turns. Well, right. You know, whatever one does, the other one will – follow blindly.
It should be noted, though, that in a week where they had 3 episodes, which is what he has championed, saying mm-hmm. that people don't want to watch 5-day-a-week soaps, they had the perfect opportunity to give us 3 days of really good
soaps.
Well,
that's the thing. That's the thing. None of these ideas that these executives are coming up with work. I mean, proof is in the pudding that they've lost 21% of their, you know, and that's what, I mean,
49 at Guiding.
Yeah. And what trips me up is that the only time the mainstream media pays attention is when an Ellen Wheeler says, I'm going to change the face of the soaps. And then she gets all these interviews. Oh, that's nice. Oh yeah, you are a revolutionary in the New Yorker or this and that. Then they don't follow up to find out, guess what? She didn't change the face of soaps. She dismantled it. And, you know, or when the soaps are dead, that's when they go, there's news, like a bad story.
Like Susan Lucci getting a pay cut or
Ellen Wheeler got so much free press for going to this revolutionary new model that has basically hastened the death of this show. And I don't blame her totally for that, because P&G and CBS have already proven that they're not going to spend any money to save this show. But it's just like, what next? You know, what next? And As the World Turns is going to follow suit. And, you know, they're both. And then at least As the World Turns for a while gave us good stories. But Now they're not even doing that. I was just watching before the episode, and Paul's lying on the floor. I don't know why, and I don't care.
It's dusty. It's dusty. It always goes back to Dusty versus Paul, and there's no point. They are trying to build a show around characters that fans are falling out of love with because they've been so badly written.
And how many Craigs does it take to save Guiding Light? I mean, how many Craigs? God, maybe my psyche is basically calling for these shows to just, you know, there's always been that rumor about one day All My Children and One Life to Live are going to merge.
Right,
I think
right.
my mind is just wanting the two shows to merge so I can have to watch one less hour of bad television.
Well, if the actors from Guiding Light if the actors from Guiding Light could end up on the sets of As the World Turns so that no one was sweating their balls off, that might work. But if we went
PNG fans don't like that. You know, they tried that with Another World, and that's one of the reasons, you know, people cried bloody murder. We don't want these Bay City people in Oakdale. Well, okay, now you have Paul and Meg. You could have had Jake, Vicky, and Carl and Rachel, but you wanted it your way, so you got Paul and Meg.
I wouldn't mind a little Reva in Oakdale.
Reva and Liz in Oakdale? And Lizzie.
Yeah. And that's what they should do. I mean, let's just call a spade a spade. How many more ratings are going to have to be? I mean, by 6 months from now, it'll be like Guiding Light can't be measured. It's going to be like 0.0007 people who are watching Guiding Light. I mean, and of course, I'll get slammed for this by saying, oh, you should give me something to promote or to be happy about. I mean, what can you be happy about a 1.3 or 1.4 when we all watch shows that we loved get gutted at 3.0? And yeah, it's a different day, but I seriously do not think I'm sorry, Guiding Light would have been canceled during the day. I mean, if it was this bad, it was this bad when like Santa Barbara and Another World got canceled, it would have been gutted way before them. You know, those shows ended with dignity, at least, you know, and on an upswing. I mean, we're going to actually see them videotaping them picking up the set, they're tearing apart the final set of Cross Creek, picking up Kim Zimmer on the couch. The Moving Men are going to be picking her up and taking her out the door. I mean, that's basically what these executives are basically doing just to keep it going, just to keep the cash cow, whatever little cash we're squeezing out of this cow, let's just squeeze it. Who cares about going out with dignity? You hear about that in primetime. You know, Mark Cherry says he won't go further than 7 seasons on Desperate Housewives because he wants his show to go out with class and with a bang and with dignity.
Well, where's that's the exact dignity? Same thing that Lost is doing on ABC.
Yeah. Days of Our Lives should have been canceled before letting this shit happen with Deirdre Hall, and Guiding Light should have ended at its 70th anniversary. Then rather than just, you know, we sit here and watch it. I mean, one day our screens are just going to go fuzzy. You know, they'll still be trying to keep it on the air. It's like, it's over.
Well, let's I'm sorry. Now that we've had Jamie the Debbie Downer, let's talk about
walk, walk. Cat AIDS is really affecting North America.
Let's talk about The Young and the Restless for a moment.
That's an uplifter. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Soap Jesus.
It is, but let's talk Thanksgiving dinner first before we get to the news and the more recent events. Thanksgiving, I thought, was pretty good. I wasn't quite as impressed with the Abbott part of the Thanksgiving because it was so desolate and lonely, but I think that that was part of the storytelling of where Jack and Sharon's relationship is, so I understand it. But I figured it would have been a great opportunity for, like, the Fisher Abbott family to take and sort of unite and conspire and get their kinks worked out.
Sorry, I was thankful that they weren't on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, Jamie and I were.
The Abbotts are no longer a family, Luke.
Oh, if you watch today's show, they are.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought the same thing you did. I was like, damn. You know, to me, I was like, you know, you already had paid the money for Beth Matland and all the extra Abbotts to, you know, why didn't they just keep them, you know, why couldn't Tracy and Dina Mergeron have stayed around to go shopping at Fenmore's for a couple of days so that they could have at least been there for the Thanksgiving episode? But you're right, it works story-wise because they were just painting this picture of this marriage, and that's so realistic. These people that know it's over and it's time to just move on, and they're sitting across this table loathing each other, and it's just like, let it go.
Then you had the Winters family and their Thanksgiving, which was okay. It wasn't anything spectacular. I particularly enjoyed Phyllis sitting at the table for Thanksgiving dinner, and we finally had a JT sighting once again. And Eric wouldn't come to join them, or not Eric, but Victor wouldn't come to join them. But I thought them at that having Thanksgiving dinner.
Well, Victor's in jail.
Well, I thought that that was before he went to jail, because didn't they invite him? Once again,
no,
I was in a haze.
No, they went to – the children went to the jail to visit him and, you know. I liked the Thanksgiving episodes. You know, yeah, soaps used to be so awesome about that, but I thought it was really good. I don't like the ones that just totally break from story. I like, you know, like General Hospital did with the whole Robin's Fantasy, which it was cute, but I like stuff that advances story.
My favorite Thanksgiving by far was One Life to Live this year. Had a great Thanksgiving, but we'll have to discuss that on the ABC podcast.
I didn't, but no, you know, it's like Y&R is just, they're really, it's hard to criticize them at all because they're actually doing what soaps are supposed to do, which is use every episode to set up and drive and prolong story. So, like, it all works, you know. Of course Sharon has a sucky Thanksgiving at the Abbott house, and then she goes over and has this great dessert with the Newmans because, I mean, the writing's on the wall. She and Nick are headed back to, you know.
Well,
I never would have thought I wanted them back together, but I do.
See, you know, I would rather have Sharon with Brad, which leads us to the major headline before we move on to the Jabot takeover story. Don Diamond is out. The Young and the Restless has basically let him go and said, don't let the door hit you on the way out. In the Speedo. What's your guys' take on this? Mike?
Well, I'm actually kind of surprised because Young and the Restless isn't one for just, you know, letting people go.
Maybe now we know that they got all that money to bring back Trisha Cast.
Yeah, the thing is with his character was that he was off screen for a while. So if it had happened maybe a month or so ago after his whole thing with David Chow, it might have made more sense. But Phyllis was just talking to him last week trying to hook him up with Sharon again. So it just seemed like this was all going to start going somewhere, and he was back in the fold, and now this news comes out.
I think there's some kind of drama.
I was kind of surprised.
I don't know what, but there's going to be, I'm sure, some drama revealed because they're setting this up to where he's about to drive story with Sharon and, you know, Jack and Nick and Phyllis. So now finding out, you know, everybody's been wondering, I mean, on all the message boards because of everything that's happened at Days of Our Lives and everything that's happened at ABC, people, I've seen it out there. Well, when is this, you know, budget crunch? And we know that the PNG shows, like, I could finance them. So we know that all the other soaps are struggling financially, but there's been no talk of how this is affecting Y&R and Bold and the Beautiful. And
well,
I think they're just a lot classier about it, but they have to be hurting too. I mean, yes, these
shows
Christine's
are popular. Well, Christine's coming back, though. According to Jillian's spoilers, Christine's coming back. So,
she owns – Lorelei Bell owns
true.
20% of
But you don't think
Bell
she's coming back for free, do you?
You caught me for a second because I'm so used to Cricket. When you said Christine, I'm trying to think, who the hell's Christine?
I'm pretty sure they're not having to pay her that. I mean, yeah, I mean, they can pay her, sure. But, I mean, she might just be taking one for the team because it's her family business. But I don't think that's going to be – that's not a, you know, a financial thing there. I think that Don Diamont is a veteran actor, and the show's logic is probably he's, you know, I'm pretty sure negotiations fell apart because I'm sure they wanted to keep him, but, you know, Soap Opera Digest said something about an ouster, and some other, like, you know, sketchy type of language to maybe it seems like there's some kind of drama there. I don't know that, but, you know, negotiations probably fell apart because I believe that, you know, all the actors in daytime are probably, when it comes time to renegotiate contracts, are not going to be offered anything more. And they're probably all going to be offered less. So, you know, that's just my speculation on that. I don't think it has anything to do with Trisha Cash. Trisha Cash, who we all...
Oh, no, I was just joking.
No, that's out there that people are like, oh, now they can bring back Trisha Cash. I've seen it like 10 times. Trisha mm-hmm. Cash left of her own accord, and she did so because she got married and wanted to leave Hollywood. I mean, I'm sure they would love to have Trisha Cash back, but I don't think there's... It's a money thing there. I think that's just, would she come back full time? Please, Trisha, come back. But I think it's an odd move if it was just we're letting him go. I mean, because it could just be that. They could be saying that, you know, we're too top heavy and we got to let somebody go. But I'm like, not smart to get rid of Brad Carlton. I mean, and unlike a lot of these other, you know, of course, I've done wishful castings for everybody that gets fired. But Don Diamont will have a lot easier time working in daytime than some of the older vets that are in trouble.
And you had a brilliant wishful casting. I would love that to happen.
Oh, yeah. Well, for him to be Anton on All My Children.
Oh,
love that gothic.
He's not going to leave the West Coast, though, do you think?
You know what? A lot of these actors need to get smarter because you're right. A lot of them are doing that, oh, no, I don't want – you know, actors used to jump from coast to coast all the time. Now they're like – you know, in the day when the industry is dying and they're getting older and their job prospects are drying up, now they're like, I won't jump from coast to coast. They need to take a page from Laura Wright.
I've got one for you. He should go to General Hospital as Stefan Cassadine. He looks a dead ringer for Tyler Christopher. They look related.
Like even
maybe he could be Thomas Christopher.
Is only like
the beautiful.
Tyler Christopher is like 10 years younger than him, but, you know.
Wait. So what did you say, Mike?
He could Thomas be Thomas Forster. Forster.
You know, it's like all these actors need to pay attention to Laura Wright. Laura Wright is the Courtney Thorne Smith of daytime television.
She is a smart cookie. Tell.
She saw the writing on the wall, and she got her ass out of New York when it was still New York instead of PPAC. And she is, even with the pay cuts ABC is about to be taken, she will still be making more than the entire cast of Guiding Light, I guarantee you. No, I'm just kidding. But still, I mean,
she'll be making more than most of the individual cast members.
She got up and moved her family across the country to take on a very hardly recast role, a role that has been difficult for other actors, and she made it her own. And some of these actors are going to have to smarten up. Like, if a role comes up on a soap on another coast, you need to do it, you know, move. I mean, what else are you doing, Andrea Evans? Move your ass to New York if that's going to make it easier for you to stay on One Life to Live. What else are you going to do?
Well, but you don't know how much what their spouses do for a living. Maybe their spouses make a ton of money.
Not doubtful.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Jabot takeover. Gloria Abbott gave a great speech. Totally pulled the rug out underneath of Jill. Jack was sitting there smiling. Kane was in dumbfounded shock as normal.
That's the truth. That poor guy. Oh,
see, Kane,
he's dumb as a box of rocks.
Kane is literally
God.
And it's so sad because I really like Daniel Goddard, but they had him go from a dumbfounded look at Lily's door to a dumbfounded look at having the rug pulled out from underneath Jabot.
And Daniel is a good actor. You know, I'm not for people. I am really not one of these people that – in fact, I'm totally being a hypocrite here because I don't believe in actors trying to tell writers how to do their jobs. But Daniel Goddard is an actor who should take a meeting with the writing department and say, please, for the love of God, write me smarter. I mean – they've got to
and
throw
this goes
the guy
against
alone.
Your. This goes against your.
It
man.
Does, but I mean, he loves this genre. He's a team player, and they're putting him with a teenage hair model in a love story, and then he gets
wait,
to
wait,
be
wait,
the
wait, 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 wait. Just to clarify, you're referring to Lily or Chloe?
I'm referring to Lily.
Okay.
Because, Elizabeth Nixon is no hair model.
What's worse is that Billy Abbott's getting sucked into that storyline.
Oh, I know. I wanted to just cry. Please. This girl, I said Val Bloom was Cricket 2.0. No. Crystal Khalil's Lily is Cricket 2.0 because, Mike, you probably remember this. Every boy in town wanted Cricket. Everybody. Oh, yeah. Philip, Scott, who ended up being her brother, Danny Romolotti. Now we got everybody in town wanting Lily. Seriously? To borrow from Tom Casciello. Seriously? Do we really believe that every one of these men in town want Lily? I'm sorry. I'm just sorry. I'm going to leave it at that. But back to the good part. That damn takeover scene was the best takeover scene I have seen since Ann Hesh helped Jake McKinnon take over Corey Publishing.
Oh, it was awesome. Iris Taylor. And the great thing, I don't know if you guys noticed it, but the great thing when Jack nodded to Billy in between Gloria's announcement.
Before we even do that, I got to go ahead, Mike. I know I'm losing my ranks in the We Hate Gloria Club, but Judith Chapman brought the noise today. She brought the noise and the funk. I'm sorry, Ron Carlovati, great writer, but next time he wants to do a takeover storyline, he needs to get the crib notes to this, because this was awesome. Her interrupting Jill and then doing that speech.
Oh, it was awesome.
I was screaming at my TV.
It was the last 15 minutes of YNR was some of the most pleasurable soap watching I've had.
Brad's reaction, Colleen's reaction, all the Abbott's sitting there grinning. Well, you know, the Abbott's that were there.
And then also you had Gloria's husband, whose name slips my mind, smirking, and Jill's reaction was awesome. And then once again, the weak note on this thing is they're writing Kane dumb. He is like, okay, I hate to say this, but that character, my brother is an avid hunter. Mm-hmm. He hunts everything under the sun. But it would not require an avid hunter to take down Kane as a character. It is literally a deer walking out into the middle of a highway and getting hit by a car.
I want to be honest. It worked for me simply because of this. Because if I was Billy Abbott and I come back home and my mother has given this person that she just met control of my father's company, I would team up with my family and destroy him too.
I totally get that.
Bonds over him as opposed to, it's like Kane is the favored son by Jill. And it's like,
Was it Brad that said something about the unqualified, like when he showed up at the door?
Well, see, that's the thing where I have to give Kane his props, because everybody keeps bringing up that he was a bartender. None of these people can talk except for Jack Abbott, who graduated from Yale. Jill Abbott was Catherine's hairdresser. Brad was the Abbott pool boy. So Jill
Melody Thomas Scott, or not Melody Thomas Scott, but Nikki was a stripper.
Nikki was a stripper. So why not? Genoa City is a town. It is the American dream.
The upward mobile, stripper, literally.
You know, Drusilla she couldn't read or write, and she became an executive.
Neil has an education.
Neil is educated.
And Victoria.
Victoria never got educated.
Oh, she did.
Married Ryan out of a boarding school. And then she ran off to study art. That's no education. Sorry, art students. But not to run across the next curve. You know, it's like this town is full of people who aren't qualified. I laugh every time someone says he's not qualified. Well, what qualified Jill? Because she can do a good bumper curl.
I think the difference would be, from Brad's point of view, is Brad may have not been qualified a long time ago.
Exactly.
Well, so he's just being condescending to the latest person who's working his way up.
Brad screwed his way into the Abbott fortune twice. And then he married that other chick, the blonde, that died and left him all the money. And that's how he got into – Victor wanted her company. So Brad sold – what was her name? You remember her, Mike? The sexy blonde. Nina Arvidsson played her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Cassie, wasn't it?
Cassandra. Yeah, he married Cassandra, and then Cassandra Rollins, and then she died, and he inherited her millions, and Victor wanted her company, so he bought control. He bought that company and gave Brad Newman stock, and that's how he became an executive.
Mike, now that I've raved about the takeover, Jamie's raved about the takeover, and Gloria, can you at least admit that the Gloria's scenes were great?
Well, the only thing that I would admit to is,
it was the great stuff today.
Yeah, and I do think that I can take her much, much better than I could take her before. I will admit that the way that she's being written as a side character and not as a main focus for everything, and I do like that they have kept that Michael is just completely driven to distraction by her and knows that whatever comes around the pike, he's going to be left to clean it up. But yeah, I can admit that it's better just because.
And her delivery has gotten better because, you know.
I think she has a better. It's like they have a better hold of her character the way that they're writing now. This seems to me the way she was intended to be.
Yes, she's acting a lot better. This is the Judith Chapman I remembered 15 to 20 years ago on Days of Our Lives. Lynn Marie Latham's writing was so ridiculous that I think it inspired bad performances, you know, except for Melody Thomas Scott, who started doing the work of her career, you know, around that time. But
this has been Melody Thomas Scott's banner year.
Yeah, but like they are writing. Gloria is not, she's not chewing all the scenery. You know, she's just, and plus she's suited to this because this was an old school 80s throwback takeover storyline. Again, like One Life to Live tried, and in my opinion, woefully botched.
And I disagree. I love the BE takeover story.
That's what I was going to say. This isn't really revolutionary for you because anytime you put a 60-year-old woman in a
standards, I love corporate takeover standards no matter what form or fashion they come in, as long as it's not
involved. This was planned out. This made sense. We already knew that the Abbotts had these shares. This was not like
Dorian. And we're rooting for them. We want the Abbotts to have the shares.
This was not Dorian Lord, the doctor, you know.
I want to interject here real quick before we move on to Days of Our Lives. What was your guys' take on Jill's reaction to Billy? Because that was great stuff, in my opinion.
Oh, my gosh. That was so awesome.
That is okay, we're recording this on a Tuesday. Jill versus Billy on Wednesday is the thing I am most looking forward to.
He is his mother's daughter because Jill has tried to screw over Catherine at every turn. So that's going to be
a little bit of
stuff.
It's coming back to bite her in the ass.
You're right. Okay, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Oh, well, I was going to say when you were talking about Judith Chapman before, I watched her on General Hospital in the 80s, and I remember her from that time. So she's not. I'm not a stranger to her or her work. So. But I just can't – this role just drives me crazy. Gloria just
– and I loved – I have to say it's like that was a hard recast for me because I loved Joan Van Ark as Gloria. And I still sit and think – and, you know, Judith is great now. I really like her. She's gelled. But I still sit and think of how awesome it would be to have Gary Ewing and Valeen Ewing married on The Young and the Restless. That was almost like fate screwed that up. Like, Joan Van Ark quit because she said she couldn't handle the pace of daytime. Then they bring on – I'm thinking like Brian Franz now. But I really think in some ways daytime could start thinking like that a little bit better. Like, you know, if they brought on – you know, Days of Our Lives, which, well, no, they can't even afford me. But if they ever had a role where they could bring on Michelle Lee to pair up with Kevin Dobson on Days, you know, that kind of stuff, it would get them mentioned at least. I mean, you know, every time there's a Knott's Landing, I mean, anything about Knott's Landing, they get on the Today Show. You know, so if they could even bring in Donna Mills and put her in a storyline with Ted Shackelford, I mean, the Knott's Landing fans would go nuts. I don't know if it would necessarily raise ratings because I don't think anything raises ratings but rape manses and CGI tornadoes these days. But good soap opera sure doesn't because, you know, well, actually, I did see the ratings for YNR went up. I think YNR jumped up what? Was it about 200,000 viewers?
Oh, I miss it. I've been so sick. I haven't been able to.
I think they did. I think YNR went up. At One Night to Live lost all their ratemans, people. They all vacated.
Well, let's talk about Days of Our Lives for a moment, because...
Do we have to? No.
I'm.
It's bad when Days is now the "do we have to" moment instead of Guiding Light.
Oh, I know, because I was thinking...
It totally is.
Yesterday, I actually watched Guiding Light, and I didn't fast forward through 1 minute of it. And I can't
tell you. It's finally getting better now that it's over. I mean, because
I'm liking Jeff Branson. Oh, we're not talking about Guiding Light, sorry.
Oh, he's appeared?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I gotta watch then today. Was it today that he appeared?
Monday, I think, was his first day.
They're pulling out all the stops, finally.
Oh, most definitely. They most definitely.
Finally. But this is like the last 6 months of Another World. It's like it's too late.
Well, let's talk about Days of Our Lives for a little bit. Mike, I know you didn't watch it this last week, but I did. And I just don't understand what is going through this show.
You sound like you're about to cry.
I am. I am about to cry. This is the soap. Like, All My Children is my soap, and that's why I'm so hard on it. But Days of Our Lives is the one that I grew up on. It's the one that I've been watching the longest. And it just... It's beyond.
It's hard. It's very hard to watch something.
It is. It's literally like Guiding Light, watching Beth Ehlers pay her bills. It's that fast.
Ken Corday ought to be ashamed of himself. He really should.
I like Sammy and Rafe. I like them. But I always have liked Allison Sweeney. She's the reason that I got hooked on this show. I like that. I'm intrigued by this Nicole and EJ thing. I know a lot of people hate it. But other than that, Philip and Melanie?
Melanie.
Oh, it's awful.
See, that's probably the secret. It wasn't that J. Kenneth Johnson had issues with money. No, I'm just kidding. I'm making this up, people.
Yeah.
But found out that he had to work with that girl, and that's what made him clean out his dressing room. I know it would make me clean out mine.
Well, and
I'm kind of curious as to why they would – well, you guys could probably answer this better than me – why they would actually let the show be renewed and then hack it to shreds when it's in such bad shape.
Because Ken Corday is only in this for the money. He doesn't care about his family's legacy. He wants to – Ken Corday, that whole, "oh, this is really hard for me." No, Kenny, you just got two – more years, basically. What, 13 months,
18 months
of a paycheck every week. Yeah, this is a no-brainer for Ken. He's, you know, this is like, you know, that's why I will cut people like Ellen Wheeler slack, because I do believe, I think she's very misguided.
Let me just pause for a moment here.
She wants.
If what you do for Ellen Wheeler is cut her slack...
Well, I'm cutting her slack on this, because even as hard as we've all been on her, I do believe she is trying to save her soap. As misguided as her attempts may definitely be, I don't think Ken Corday even knows who Marlena is. I really don't think he's paid attention to that show since Marlena was married to Don Craig.
Well, and what I don't understand is, we have been cycling through young female actresses on this show.
The most dreadful. The ones that make Aaron Sanders look like Meryl Streep. That Molly Burnett creation.
Well,
really.
The thing is, what there's obviously something wrong with the casting department. Because since it...
They're deaf, dumb, and blind.
Since the teenage characters, I would argue that Darren Brooks and Rachel Melvin and Blake Barris were the last three decent casts. So anyone that came after those three has
I bitched about Shelley Hennig, but I will take five more Shelley Hennigs over ever having to see a Kristen Ritten or a Molly Burnett on my screen.
Yeah, I have to wonder. I agree with Luke. I mean, the whole thing with soaps is that, you know, you may not like the teen generation in the next upcoming group of people, but they are the future. And you have to mold them and create them just as carefully as you do the adults.
And here's
the formula has been there since the day one of All My Children, where Erica Kane tells Mona, I'm going to have it all. I'm going to be a star. And Mona's like, stop that, Erica, you little slut.
Well,
because they tie them. And it's the same way they did with Bobby Spencer, tying her to that old nurse, the one that was up there. And then they tied Laura, they made, you know, her the daughter of, you know, what's her name. But you know, now they don't do that. It's like they bring on, I think they think they're doing that. They're like, okay, let's bring Susan Rogers out and have Aunt Maggie have a scene with her so that'll make the fans like her. It used to work. No.
Right.
Mm-mm. No.
That's not what worked, though. Mm-mm.
We can see Susan Rogers' contempt. Susan Rogers is thinking, I want an Emmy doing
but
this.
But here's my
and
question.
Now I have to do scenes with this twit.
Okay. Here's my thing, though. Why can't these people now, with these characters, if you instead of sticking by actors or actresses, if you can obviously see that it is not working, like Young and the Restless did with Aaron Sanders, why do you not immediately reach
out? Because the person that is in charge of this show, we always blame Dina Higley, but Gary Tomlin is now executive producing this show. I know a lot of people liked this soap opera, but I'm fixing to go there. Gary Tomlin produced Sunset Beach, which was not known for finding, except for a save few, like three or four, was not known for finding great talent. I mean, this is the man who hired Christina Chambers and sicked her on the world as Maria on Sunset Beach. And then we had to endure her again as Marty Saybrook on One Life to Live. And wasn't he at One Life to Live during that time? This man should not cast church plays. I mean, I'm sorry. These people, and now he's hiring all these passions actors, and I'm going to be nicer this week because I'm liking Marstoff. I know I said I wasn't going to watch the show, but we have to do it for the podcast, so blame Luke. No, I'm just kidding. But no,
I like it for the greater good, Jamie.
Brady Black is working for me. I don't mind Galen. Galen was one of the few good things about Passions. Let me clarify why this ticks me off. It's not good form that we see all these Passions in the show right before we find out we can't afford Deirdre Hall and Drake Hogeston. It's like, well, why are we bringing on all these other people that, you know, why are you bringing on John and Marlena's child? I know Marlena's not the biological mother, but still. When they're leaving, and I know what they're doing, they're trying to tie him more in. That whole crap that they did with the Kyriakises the other day, I called a friend and I was like, okay, they are scrambling. And I've seen soaps do this before. They're looking around at who they have, and they're trying to formulate a family that was never there. The Victor Kyriakis has had three children on the show. You know, he had Beau, an illegitimate child, Isabella, an illegitimate child, and then he had Philip with Kate, and then he had a nephew, Justin. But the Kyriakises, except for when Victor was there with Justin and Adrian, have never really been a family unit. They are so trying to pimp the Kyriakises as a family, with Victor and Kate and Brady and Kate asking Brady, how are you doing? No, they had an episode where they had a party for Kate, and Victor insisted on it. Victor and Kate hate each other. Kate tried to kill him. She tried to use the mafia to kill Victor. They are not some loving ex-spouses like John and Jill Abbott. And Kate talking to Brady, well, how are you doing with your dad? I know that must be hard on you. Like there's some family. And then Chelsea telling Chloe, who has known Victor years longer than Chelsea, you just gotta, my grandpa's hard like that. You've only known Victor 2 years. It's not working. We're not buying this. It's like, where are the Hortons?
She ought to talk about being hard. She runs over children, for crying out loud.
I know. And that's why that little baby stops acting crazy when she comes around. That's a little autistic child. That's the only reason that child does that crazy with Chelsea is because he knows that she will run him over if he shows out with her. She will throw him out into the middle of the road and mow him down like a stray blade of grass. Like she did poor little Zach. And I'm sorry, poor Rachel Melvin, because, you know, she should win an award. She should win the Jeff Branson Award because he managed to find some popularity after killing half of Pine Valley. And, you know, reading that script, it's like, you're going to kill Bo and Hope's child tomorrow. It's like, what?
Yeah, right, exactly. They already hate me for coming out of the swamp, and now I got to kill somebody.
It's like, that is really acting under fire. I have to give her her props.
So going around the circle real quick, final thought, Mike?
Oh, just hang in there. Now we got 5 days. We got 5 days now, so, you know, hang in there. Maybe we'll care by the end of the week why Paul is lying on the floor in a puddle of blood.
No, I can assure you that will never happen.
Meg shot him.
I'm hoping maybe Meg's in town. I hope somebody hides Dr. Bob and ties him up in a closet so Paul can just
maybe the baby came out and shot him.
we know who shot him. Dusty did. Jamie, final thought.
My final thought is way to go, Aaron Zucker, in the midst of that muck and disarray that you have to work for. You are turning out one of the best performances I've ever seen you give. It's like finding a diamond in a big old pile of manure.
Well, folks, we would encourage you to comment on this episode on the blog at daytimeconfidential.com. Click on podcast and then the episode number that corresponds with what you see on your iPod or computer. We thank you for listening. Until next time, so long, folks.
Bye.